Hey guys, welcome back for an all-new episode of the Face Rocker Podcast. I'm podcast producer Benji Dolly, and I'll be gearing you up for today's episode, which, by the way, was brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Head to squarespace.com today and use the promo code FACERocker to get 10% off at checkout. Before we get going, I just wanted to give you guys a quick rundown of what's happening on the channels this week. Head over to Rocket Jump 2 and you can catch Freddie and Jimmy Wong and their adventures at this year's VidCon on the latest This Week at Rocket Jump. True to this week form, it's hilarious, it's dark, it's twisted, it takes you where you least expect it, and we think you guys will get a kick out of it, so make sure you check that one out. Head over to the Rocket Jump Film School and you can catch friend of the family and VGHS cinematographer John Salmon as he teaches us how to use the sun to our advantage when lighting outdoors, especially when strapped with minimal resources. John loves his work, he's a true professional, he's a master of his craft, and he made a fantastic, informative, and entertaining video, and we think it'll really help you guys out that are out there working on your own film career. So check that out. Anyways, you're here for the podcast, so we might as well intro this thing, right? As you may know, Metal Gear Solid came out this week, and that's a big deal here at the office. So of course, Matt and Freddie have risen from their edit dungeon, they're back, and they're here to talk Metal Gear Solid, and they brought head writer of Borderlands 2, head writer of Rocket Jump the Show, and he's also now a published author, especially on the Metal Gear Solid subject, Anthony Birch, and these guys talk about the new game, and especially what Metal Gear Solid has meant to them in their lives growing up, and it's a fantastic conversation. I think you guys will really dig it. It's pretty funny, and it goes really deep in depth into a subject that we think you guys will enjoy a lot. So we hope you enjoy the podcast. All right, guys, welcome back to another Face Rocker podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got Freddie and Matt back in the building.
Yes.
Where have you guys been?
Wow.
And another part of this building that's slowly being constructed.
We were working on...
You guys are busy, right?
We're trying to cut... Yeah, we're locking those shorts.
Exactly. And we're joined by Anthony, who you've been busy doing the exact same, right?
Sure.
Still busy.
Definitely not been just surfing Reddit and coming up with ideas for shorts and stuff for a hypothetical future in which we do more.
Anthony actually has been joining us out in the back alley where Eli has gotten...
As you can see, yeah, we pulled Anthony...
Full
from the yard. I was getting swole.
Yeah. Yes, Anthony was in the relentless pursuit of swole.
We have to enlarge in his office because he's just getting so big.
He's getting
right
so
now.
Large, all them protein shakes. But Eli got this weight set in the back, and that's kind of become the thing that the guys are doing, which is just every like around 5 o'clock every day, everyone looks around and is like, yo, we do this? And then just a whole bunch of dudes go out and attempt very poor form lifts while Eli...
While I paint them. Miniatures.
Yeah, and Matt paints miniatures.
Matt's painting miniatures. Jamie has knee sleeves on.
Yep.
Like, he looks like a dad. His knee sleeves, I'm pretty sure he wears them under his work clothes. And he like Superman, he rips his stuff off. He's wearing his IU gear, and he's like, let's get a pump. And he grabs Anthony and Eli, and they just go for it.
He pumps us. He just uses his dumbbell.
He grabs you guys for curls.
Well, that's actually what I remember reading. So there's this guy who's like a natural bodybuilder, and he is like, this is how what you can look like if you pump it. And by the way, you look at him, and you're just like, this guy's using steroids. Like, his neck muscles have neck muscles. His ear just goes to his shoulder, you know, like that one of those guys, and you're like, that's not natural. I've seen the Olympics.
Yeah.
That's what natural looks like. But his whole thing was just like he had a whole thing on like how people in prison without weights, because weights, you know, represent either weapons or a problem for, you know, for guards in prison. How do they get swole in prison? And it is using other people. It's like squats. It's just like you start with the lightest guy and you work your way up.
Yeah.
Like bicep curls is like you do this while with a towel and
buddy
another
push-ups.
Guy holds it down so that another guy's getting a workout at the same time.
Plyometrics. Classic.
Benji's all well familiar with that all the time.
Benji's just preparing if he goes to prison.
That's my dad in our basement dungeon of torture. We had wrestling mats and training. Like, he loved towel workouts.
Yeah.
We had a partner. You grab a towel. You both use a towel, and everything you do is resistance-based. So, like, you do curls, pull-ups, push-downs, like, tug-of-wars, like, neck exercises, like, everything. It was just another person. But we've been trying, since you guys have been gone, we've been trying out something new at the podcast. We call our water cooler segment. We started the show usually we just start talking back in the day and we just see wherever it took us.
Yeah.
Now we'll do that talking part in the beginning. We're like, what's going on this week?
like blah, 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 this stuff we would yeah. talk about if we were at the office. I feel like you're really excited about Disney Infinity right now, Matt, and I don't know anything about it.
Well, yeah, let's talk about the biggest video game release this week. Disney Infinity.
That's right. Yep.
I was saying there's no two different, like, if you, Metal Gear Solid 5 is what, like the one man auteur versus the evil corporation that's like striking his name off the box and all this stuff, and then Disney Infinity is like the most international multi conglomerate corporate like piece of advertising, marketing, synergy crap, whatever you want to call it, like ever probably released in the history of mankind. And those two things are released like in the same day. But it's slick. I'll say, like, the Disney, I think the first Disney Infinity was like a surprise because it's like, oh, this is not a terrible game. And I worked at Disney Interactive, so I fully expected it to be a terrible game. And it was fine. And the figures were fun. And then the bigger surprise was that Marvel Disney 2.0 was a terrible game. Completely boring. I didn't play any of it, and I was not expecting much from Disney Infinity 3. But, man, they nailed it. It's like Disney did. They capture kind of the – it's that weird, special superficiality that it still feels earnest that Disney specializes in. Like, you know you're being sold to, but, man, you just love it.
Yeah.
It's like the amusement park, and it's great. It's slick. It actually feels like a game for once. There's no – it's.
It can be fun, though, when someone's really hard selling you in something, though.
That's yeah, but it's like it's the perfect Disney sell because it's like yeah. you – the whole time – like, they're literally giving you more Disney stuff. And you're just like, yeah, like Star Wars Nightmare Before Christmas. Now I'm in a Phineas and Ferb world. And again, like, load times are good. The figures are fun. It's got Star Wars. Like, yeah. That's the thing. That Star Wars score kicks in. And you're like jumping around as Anakin Skywalker.
That's borderline cheating as far as game design goes. Yeah, like, exactly. If you can set in the Star Wars score to play at the right time, yeah. It's like, it doesn't even matter what's happening. Yeah, yeah. It just immediately feels good.
It's like I was in the middle of like Nightmare Before Christmas land. I pressed a button and all of a sudden Ewok Village was next to me. And I was climbing around Ewok Village with like the Jedi score.
The Moon of Endor.
There you go. Well, it was specifically the Ewok Village. If I said Moon Endor, maybe somebody's like, what part of the Moon Endor? The Lake of Tanarsis? I don't know. Any place? No, I made that up. Of course, I don't know.
It sounds real.
That was really good.
I would have bought that
110%. Wait, real quick. Hold on. Yeah, that's a really good skill to have. Benji, name another fictional place on the
Moon of Endor. What's your favorite place on the Moon of Endor?
The first thing that came to my mind was Dagobah, but that's not in Endor.
Anthony, you lost like a vacation on the Moon of Endor.
The Forest of Tranquility.
Nah,
that's a Doctor Who.
And the moon.
Right? I don't know anything. I don't know anything about
the Shrine of Alakhtul.
Nope.
What? Oh,
that's see? Diablo. That's where you kill a Diablo boss.
That's right.
Or
you're right. Shoot.
Yeah, dude. I don't know anything about Endor's geography.
Dang, Matt's really good at coming up with
just say something.
BS fantasy names.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, we're just gonna come back to this random. We're just gonna ambush you.
Force of Banara. Are we going?
That just sounds like you're having a stroke.
Force of Banara.
I'm gonna hit you up with that.
I mean, I don't have to pitch at Disney Infinity. You've been pitched it on every single billboard on the planet. I'm just saying, it's actually. I think if people gave it a chance, they're like, oh yeah, this is like cool Uncharted with a bunch of Disney crap. And if you like toys, it's cool. Gotcha. But let's talk Metal Gear.
We can't talk Metal Gear yet.
Oh,
we
have this to is talk. Water cooler?
No, we have to talk. We have to talk for
soap
a couple
operas.
Minutes.
I'm watching soap
and
opera.
And then we talk.
Yeah,
that's why we have
a new project.
Yeah, you
got
to tell us.
Yeah. Project.
I'm watching soap opera. I decided I'm gonna watch soap opera for a year.
Dude, you I can't believe you didn't come to me. You finally decided to watch soap operas.
Do you watch soap
don't
operas?
Choose WWE Monday Night
it's
Raw.
It's not the same thing.
That Look, is the ultimate
no,
soap opera.
No, but I've watched WWE, and I would watch more of it, and it's great, and I'm glad I watched it, and I would totally watch more, because it is a male soap opera. But yeah. I feel like people always say, like, something soap opera, and like I don't think most people have ever watched a soap
ever
opera
ever watched one
outside
yeah.
of like an episode.
Well, what's interesting to me is just through just osmosis culturally, everybody kind of knows what a soap
yeah.
opera
but
is
like,
and the feel of it, and kind of the high dramatic stakes and the general. But nobody, you're right. I think
even
actually,
within the first, just watching the first week of it, it's already a lot of stuff I thought is how soap opera operated. Wow, that's a hard thing to say. Yeah. It's not. Like it's different.
Well, like
it's a
what?
Little
like
bit
give
different.
An example.
Like I thought, how much you are thrown into it is crazy to me. So like this week, I watched the first week last week. I watched five episodes. This week was like seven characters I hadn't seen last week. And then I started watching
really?
The intro sequence.
Same show.
There are like 23 characters in the intro sequence, so you must not see them for weeks at
a
time.
For a while, yeah.
And it's just
So it's like you would think in shows, like a lot of time TV shows, like take your Game of Thrones or what have you, if there's multiple characters, they check in on them. And even in,
yeah.
you know, sometimes to the detriment of the show, they'd be like, yo, let's see what's going on
Which
over here.
I guess
here.
Makes sense because you probably only have the actors for so many weeks a year. Mm-hmm. Like there's probably so many production reasons
What
for
soap
it.
Opera did you get on?
So I'm doing Bold and the Beautiful. I was tossing between Bold and the Beautiful and Young and the Restless. Young and the Restless yeah. is the number one, but it's an hour long. And I was like, ah. Like I'm going to do this for a year.
I thought you were
going to try 30 minutes.
I thought you were going to try and like crush all 60 years of Guiding Light.
No, well, I was on the discussion I had with Freddie when I told him I was going to do this. I was like, yeah, I was looking in. And, you know, my obsessive compulsive like viewing kind of strategy, I was like, well, where do I start?
Like, do I start at the beginning? What if there's a new showrunner?
The like, show yeah, maybe I start from the new showrunner because maybe they like reestablish everything. Or maybe you start from when a new writer started. No, I was like, wait, how would the normal person who's going to watch a soap opera start the show? They plug in their TV, be like, yo, I'm not working anymore. Turn it
on.
Are
you watching the ads around the soap operas?
No, I fast forward. Though sometimes like I end up sometimes you're watching if you're on the bike or something, you'll not fast forward through the ads. It's interesting because they literally do like this part of Bold and the Beautiful is brought to you by, and what they're selling is very interesting. It's a lot of like school kid, like obviously it's mostly targeted towards
moms.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not commercials I'm used to seeing. Anyways, interesting. And I'll
and real quick,
I'm excited about watching today. It's like within like
did it get you
now
already?
My wife
says
I'm watching
eyes,
within
yeah.
like it's not that it's good, but you get why it works because like man, like I gotta see because
the hell happens.
Yeah. Boom. The old man just broke up with his young girlfriend because he can't have a kid. And like I'm like, yo, she took that tough. And his son wants to have sex with her. So it could work out for everybody, but man, he's gonna feel betrayed when he does.
Oh dude,
so,
that like, is
I'm
not gonna work.
I'm ready
out.
To go. I wanna see what happens.
Wait, I have a question. So what was interesting was this last week you had told me like, oh, this is the big thing. The old man is going out with this girl.
Yeah.
And now it sounds like they just immediately the tumult must just be ridiculous. The back and forth between what's happening.
You'd be interested. You'd be interested in watching kind of the performances because there's a lot of times you're like, man, like. They really did one take on the scene, and like literally, you can see the actor forgetting a line and then like recovering from it.
That's amazing.
But these are professional actors that are acting every single day. Like, there's nobody who's working harder for them. There's no actor who works harder than a soap opera actor. And then you'll get to a moment like the big like breakup scene, and you're like, dude, like they deliver it.
Yeah.
And like suddenly the performance is really good.
Oh,
and they have
so
like tears in their eyes.
To stuff.
Mm-hmm. They build up to stuff, and they probably care about certain scenes really well. And
Of course, they're just good actors. Do you mind if we just swap out really quick, very fast here with someone who just walked in? Really quick. It'll take just 2 minutes because I have a question for you.
Okay. Hop in. Here, hop in
Jimmy?
With me.
So Matt's... we have Jimmy Wong here, my brother, who just got back from PAX. And let me ask you this. Jimmy... Matt's been watching The Bold and the Beautiful, a soap opera.
He's not going to watch soap opera for a year.
He has periscoping.
Yeah, and he's watching an episode a year. Now, you were on the soap opera, right?
Yes.
Wait, what were you on?
What?
Days of Our Lives.
Could you what? Get in the mic. Could you talk
about Days of Our Lives.
Could you talk about that experience briefly? Because we're talking
about that.
How long were you on it?
For 5 seconds.
Man,
oh,
Jimmy
so
was
episode.
On for 5 seconds on one episode.
Ellery said soap opera people are the nicest people she's met. What was
your experience? Let's think about one thing. I also worked with Ray Wise recently. Legendary actor Ray Wise is what we always call him on set. Yeah. And he is
Benji
on,
just
he's
mumbled.
On the, he's on the Young and the Restless
just,
right now.
Benji just mumbled RoboCop.
So I got to,
walked away.
Not Leland Palmer.
So I got to ask him a little bit about what it's like to be on a soap opera because... so I took acting.
Are you texting?
No, I'm trying to see. I'm trying to see what project I was on. I forgot the name for some. Days of Our Lives. Yeah, it wasn't Days of Our Lives.
But you're only on for like one day.
Yeah, it was called Under Five, which means you have under 5 lines.
Yeah.
And then
how many takes did you get?
2, because they don't mess around. yeah, they're filming upwards of 30 pages of content
a
day.
And to give you guys some perspective there, fever pitch for season 3 VGHS was like 8 or 9
pages.
Yeah,
fever pitch. And the most we ever did on VGHS season 1 was 11 to 12 pages. And that
normal
season 3
day.
On the first half of episode 4, we shot all in one day, which was 14 pages.
Yeah,
but
soap opera normal day is 3 times, 4 times.
Yeah, and we're talking heavy dialogue, and these people have to sit and memorize 30 to 40 pages a day.
Yeah,
of dialogue. So that's why they're incredibly hardworking and they're real actors. So I took it's called a casting director workshop where you can go and the casting director will sit there and teach a bunch of students like, hey, I'm going to give you scenes. You can audition for me and then I'll give you the notes that I would because I cast this. And it was Marnie Saida and she cast Days of Our Lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so afterwards she called me in for a random under 5 and it was a process server, the guy that says,
look nothing like
that's
a process
great.
Server.
That's the point of a
process
server.
Anybody can be a process server.
Anyone can
be
a process server.
What do you think a process server looks like?
At least a guy who can, handle himself if things get ugly. Like,
really?
Take a couple punches.
I guess
you could be a processor.
You never see it coming.
That's
true. I guess you would never see it coming. Okay,
so I played a process server, and then I
got
there.
What were your lines? You remember them?
Yeah. I asked his name, and then you've been served. it's under five lines.
Keep that stuff in the brain box. It's good.
It's incredible that you can recall. That's, ladies and gentlemen, acting.
Yeah. So the guy was in hospital because his lover or something. Like, there was the amounts of betrayal and like and damage and shit that these people get into is insane. But Marty Seydis made a really good comment, which is, if you're on a soap opera, if you are BSing even just for a half second, any of the stuff you're saying, because it's so hyper, like it's so big and it's out there, everyone will know, and it's not the point. And that's not why you're there. Really? So these actors are 1,000% dedicated to the scenes they're doing, to the craziness of the levels that they're doing.
Yeah, I was telling Freddie
that. Because you can't lie. You cannot lie when you're doing that stuff.
The dialogue is so emotive and direct. Like, it's you can't really play with it. Like, it has to be emotionally true.
And I was thinking, it's the all caps.
And it's interesting because when I watch it, it's like there's times where I'm like, oh, this scene's not that important. And like, you can, again, there's moments where I can literally see the actor, like, they're remembering their line. And some people would see it as bad acting. Like, literally, I'm seeing it as like a first draft. Like, they just are literally getting it. But what I was saying is interesting is, like, so the end of last week, obviously, at the end of the week, the soap opera will do, like, a big moment to make sure you're watching through to the weekend so far.
Interesting.
Like, a lot of stuff happened at the end of last week. But even this week, I was saying, when they get to the big scenes, it's like, these are good actors. Like, when they get to, like, the big betrayal scene or stuff like that, I'm like, these are real performances. Like, this is legitimate stuff. And it's fascinating because, again, they're shooting 30 pages in a day, so they're still doing that in one or two takes.
They can't mess around. Yeah, when I went in, so it was really – because you can tell they've been there for so long. They're so comfortable on set, too, because they're like, we got this. Like, I'm nailing these pages every single day. It's easy.
Yeah.
And they're all seasoned actors. They've been doing this for tons of years and getting paid very well. I went in and my line was, again, Mr. So-and-so, and the person goes, yes, and then you've been served.
Yeah.
And he's in a hospital bed. We did it a couple of times and the guy didn't like it. So on the spot, he changed what the scene was, how it worked.
Oh, really?
So he was like, you know, let's do it this way. Just come in and ask my name. So I did the same thing. I asked his name. And then instead of me saying, you've been served, his character originally was caught by surprise. He just looked at me and decided that at that moment, his character just was like, I know what's happening. Come on, give it to me. And so he added in a little line for himself and like took the thing from my hand.
Did he cut a line of yours?
Yes, but I think I still got fitted in there somehow.
Do you think maybe...
You know what happens? He was giving... Like,
are you feeling betrayed?
Yeah.
Are you looking back at it?
He actor, soap opera.
For all those, like, looking forward to the discussion of Metal Gear Solid 5, let's continue talking about soap opera.
Anyway,
it's the same kind of
thing. That was it, The guys were super confident. They're all, like, very, like, happy to be there, and everyone that was working on it.
Yeah,
as soon as it was done, they're like, great, and everyone's up, they're out, the crew's moving. It's like watching one of those wrestling shows. Like, they have to nail it, because they can't mess around. They're doing 12 different setups that day. They're going to 8 different places with different settings, and they just go, they just pop off.
Cool.
Let's pop it off. Very impressive.
All right. Thank you, Jimmy, for stopping by briefly to share with us. I thought that was very fortuitous that he happened to walk in right in the middle of our, and I remembered that he was talking about how he had a soap opera experience. So anyway, Matt, I think every time you're on the podcast, he's got to update us. I'm making him do it in the morning.
Yeah, I was about to say, making me do it in the morning meetings.
The morning meetings, I give him 30 seconds to update it.
And
you actually probably need a minute looking at how long 30 seconds is.
A lot of stuff happens. A lot of stuff happens in a week.
All right. Yeah.
We'll take a break really quick. We'll come back and we'll get in on that Metal Gear Solid. How's that sound?
All right, cool Metal Gear Solid discussion.
Hey, everybody. We're going to take a quick break to tell you about one of the Face Rocker podcast sponsors, Squarespace. Building a website can be tough. And even if you do know your way around coding, creating something that looks good and works well is a time-consuming affair. Whether it's for a business site, a portfolio, a restaurant, or whatever else, in this day and age, you probably need one anyway. Well, lucky for you, Squarespace makes it easy to build websites without breaking a sweat. Squarespace provides simple, powerful, and a beautiful website that looks professionally designed regardless of skill level, no coding required. Not only does Squarespace provide you with intuitive and easy-to-use tools to create your website with, Squarespace also has state-of-the-art technology powering your site to ensure security and stability. And you know you can trust in Squarespace for your website needs when millions of people and some of the most respected brands in the world trust in them too. Seriously, you can't beat the ease and simplicity of Squarespace. Squarespace gives you 24/7 online support and a beautiful website for only $8 a month. That's right, you heard me, only $8 a month. You can even get a free domain if you buy Squarespace for the year. So what are you waiting for? Start a trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code FACERocker to get 10% off your first purchase and to show your support for the Face Rocker podcast. That's FACERocker, FACEROCKER. We want to thank Squarespace for their support of the podcast. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
So, there's a reason we have Anthony here, other than the fact that Metal Gear Solid came out. You're not just a huge fan. I wouldn't say huge fan, but you know pretty much a lot about it. You wrote a book.
Yes, right.
He wrote a book.
I wrote a book about Metal
You're
Gear.
A published author.
Wait, are you
Ash and I wrote a book together about it.
Oh. Are you and Ash then the only two published authors
in
on the
office?
Subject of academic discourse relating to Metal Gear Solid?
No. There are a couple other, because it's primarily
answer.
Published. So, yes.
Ah, wow.
Please, you two can own the only academic, and it's also not academic at all. Like, within 50 pages, we're making jokes about boobs.
Sounds like my kind of book.
If you want your critical analysis to come with a side of absolute, just bottom-of-the-barrel humor, then you will really like the book.
Nice.
But,
Well, tell us a little bit about the book and the process and
so the
where we could get it. You have a copy of it, right? Look at that.
Book.
Came prepared.
Here.
It's called Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah. So it's part of an anthology. There's like an anthology of books called Boss Fight Books.
In fact, what's hilarious is it's called Metal Gear Solid, and underneath it says by Ashley and Anthony Birch. So for someone who is unfamiliar with the fact that Metal Gear Solid is a video game, they may wrongly conclude that you...
some grandma's like, my grandkids
son talks about this game.
To play Metal Gear... I guess it must be this.
I guess kids play books these days.
Yeah. We can disappoint so many children thanks to grandparents. We can be the straight to DVD version of Aladdin that isn't actually made by Disney. So Boss Fight Books is this anthology where they got a bunch of interesting people and then us to talk about different games with a critical lens and like take different attacks on it. And they had like academics and scholars and all these kind of people talk about older games.
Boring.
Like, we want something different now. We want
fun.
A brother and a sister that don't know that much but are kind of funny.
Wait, are you saying that the other ones are not as funny?
No, they're not. Most of the other ones are not funny at all.
So this is the only one you want to read. Book 9. So in
book
the series,
9.
I mean, they're
just,
more.
You can just skip straight to book 9.
It's not like the Rocky movies where you need to see all of them.
Like, start
order.
Off pretty strong, but like books 2 to 8 were pretty rough. But then book 9.
9
that's
is where it really hits its stride.
Well, what was funny is that so this book came out.
Yeah.
And you guys very, very humbly and very quietly like, oh, they did this book out. And then I was funny as it came to the office just very slowly. I realized every single person had a copy of it somewhere around them or were in the middle of reading it or had it on a Kindle or something like that. I was like, wow. I feel like everyone here is reading this book and just kind of quietly going through it.
Well, percentage of those are because somebody went, you wrote a book? And I went, yeah, do you want a copy for free? Because I have a copy for free. They went, okay. And then I just threw it at them.
Dude, John Carmen devoured it.
John Carmen gave me the best feedback I've ever gotten on anything I've ever done ever.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm so happy I read this book and I'm so excited to play Metal Gear Solid 5 with a new critical lens. I was like, that's word for word exactly what I wanted.
I love you.
Matt, have you read it yet?
No.
I have read it. I do highly recommend it. If you can get it in physical form, recommend that more. Actually,
John Carmen bought 2 copies. That's how
I mean, you
was.
Did get John.
He
like,
gave
really
me one.
Psyched. Like he told, he was like, "Make sure you text me when you guys start talking about Metal Gear today. I'm gonna hop in there." Okay.
Oh, cool.
So like, he's gonna switch out with me because you got him so excited to talk about it, and I guess he wants to defend
it.
He thinks Matt's gonna dog it, and he's like, "You gotta let me come in here to defend."
We were already
it.
Talking
Matt's
about it today.
After it.
I think I like
I'm gonna text
it.
Right
he's
now.
Solid
in
there. There's Metal Gear Solid does not need defending.
Real quick before we get too deep into that. So Metal Gear Solid 5 just came out. Big gaming event. Metal Gear 5, The Phantom Pain, or was that Ground Zeroes? Or
It was just Metal Gear Ground Zeroes, and then Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, and this is Metal Gear Solid 5: The Phantom Pain.
Okay, so not confusing at all.
No, not at
as
all.
In the tradition of all Metal Gear games. And so you have a book. It's about the first Metal Gear.
Yes, it's about Metal Gear Solid, which
Metal
is
Gear
the,
Solid,
first
the first
PS1,
PS1
game,
PS1.
But the third
yeah,
in
right.
the series.
That's right, and you can get that on Amazon.com.
He knows
do
his
a
stuff.
Search.
You get Amazon.com, or you can get it on BossFightBooks.com.
Yes, so I highly recommend it, and I'm very glad that you're here today because it'll lend a little bit of levity to the discourse that is about to happen, which is Matt Arnold hates Metal Gear.
I hate it.
It's more dramatic if you hate a thing than if you just don't feel a thing.
So what was your experience with Metal Gear, Matt? Your first experience,
I mean, I think that might have... You were asking me when I first played it, because I think maybe it just didn't hit... Like, maybe I didn't play it right when it came out, because I didn't have a PlayStation. I had a Nintendo 64, so I didn't play it when it came out.
You're one of the dirty Nintendo boys.
Yep. And when I first played it,
in the basement.
I remember trying to download it on the PC. I couldn't get it to work on my PC.
Wait, back up. You tried to download it on the PC, a.k.a. you tried to pirate it on the PC.
I tried to pirate it.
Got off Morpheus.
And it didn't work very well.
Oh, dude.
But
Morpheus.
I did play, I loved the Game Boy Color one, which was, I thought it was called Ghost. It's Ghost Babel.
Yeah. But,
that's
an unofficial title, kind of.
Unofficial title. Yeah, and I loved that game. That game was great. And then I've played the first one finally, But as Twin Snakes, and I really played it just because I wanted to see Ryo Kitamura's cutscenes because he directed Verses.
Who's an incredible Japanese action and director. And those cutscenes are one, people either love them or hate them. Yeah. And more, it sounds like more often than not, people hate them.
Yeah. Because they feel like it's so stylistically different from the original Metal Gear.
Yeah, and that was crazy to me because I did go back when the HD pack came out. I went back to play the original, and I was like, people hated those cutscenes? Because like these are like the same cutscenes, just boring as hell. At least Ryo Kitamura's was like crazy camera angles and stuff. And like I've gone back to see Twin Snakes, and like it doesn't hold up. I mean, Ryo Kitamura's cutscenes are insane, but the first one was freaking boring as hell. But I remember even then, like I literally remembered feeling like I was just struggling through the game just to see like the closest thing I could to another Versus, because I don't know, I like Win. What was that? Do you remember the game on 64? It's called like Win something. It was like a Melga. Win back.
Yeah.
I thought that was better than Metal Gear Solid. Like, I enjoyed
it. It's more of a shooter.
Yeah. It's a different kind of game. I don't know. But, like, I remember, like, I was just playing. I was like, man, I just don't like this game very much. But these cutscenes are pretty cool.
You probably also had the thing I had where it's like you have an N64 and any game that you play that's not on PS1 is like, this is so much better than the equivalent of PS1. God, I'm so glad not one of those idiots has a PS1. Gosh. Final Fantasy sounds stupid.
So glad my parents paid $70 for this cartridge. Just how much like Turok.
Turok is no, that was, the greatest
My neighbor
game.
Literally did that. He did the buyer's like fallacy where he's just like, yeah, you know, like Turok, it's like Toys R Us, it's like the best, right? And it's like, yeah. Yeah.
I sure love moving around with the seat with the camera buttons in Turok. It's so fun.
But I don't know what look the history of Metal Gear Solid is just
Let me ask you this real quick then. Because I think a lot of us had sort of shared experiences with Metal Gear. You know, like I played with my brother, and like were there kids at school like who you talked to about it, or was it just you by yourself just trying out this weird new game? Did you talk to anybody at that time?
No, people definitely liked Metal Gear. Like there was kids in my school that liked Metal Gear. Metal Gear's always been, like I said, I described it as like that cool, it's like the neighbors having a really cool party and I keep walking by it, and then when I finally get let in, everybody just kicks me out, and I don't know why I don't have a good time at the party. Like I feel like I should. It's everybody I know likes it. It's like it seems to hit, like I like anime, I like that weird stuff, I love freaking platinum games, Bayonetta is like one of my favorite games, like all that stuff. Every time a new Metal Gear Solid comes out, I buy it, I try to play it, I get bored in 4 hours.
What's hilarious,
a year later I try it again.
What's hilarious is that this exact pattern is impossible in any other medium, by the way. Yeah. Like, there's no thing that comes out that's like, well, this movie came out, I saw the first four of them, I hated all four, but the fifth one came out, I had to buy that movie. Or it's like, oh man, I got this new board game. It's like, well, this whoever makes these board games, I hate.
And I even wish I just don't like them. And I really wish I had an interesting reason to dislike. That's the thing. I don't think it's like even hate. It's like it's. I wish I had an interesting thing to say about Metal Gear Solid. I wish I was like, oh, you know, ultimately I think the politics and the sexism is problematic and blah blah blah. It's like no. It's just the cutscenes are boring and the game's boring to me.
Yeah, I think it's not actually about. It's not a party you can't get into. It's we're all doing hallucinogens and you have a natural immunity to that hallucinogen.
Yeah, I was just like I don't get. The cutscenes are, everybody knows the cutscenes are long, so it's not a thing. It's like cutscenes are long, but like even the absurdity doesn't hit me in the same way that like a Platinum Games does, or like something. Because again,
you feel like you've seen me like that sort of. Because I mean, because Kojima definitely just, one is an auteur absolutely, and two, he definitely tackles
insane
crazy
stuff
in not subtle ways. He'll have a character sit you down for 30 minutes and be like, let me talk to you for reals though on nuclear proliferation, and for the first time in the entire game use actual stock footage of actual humans moving nuclear waste into barrels and stuff, and you're like, I'm just watching a propaganda film at this point, and it's kind of dope because it's so earnest, but at the same time it's clearly not, like, it's not the best way to go about that if you were seriously trying to convey a message.
All right, we got John. John's in the building.
I just
here,
find it.
Me out, John.
You know what it is? I think in the end, and because there's no way to think. I'm trying to think of like what's different about that and like Bayonetta, and it's like other than the fact that Bayonetta at least has the restraint to like keep the cutscenes like.
But it seems like
they show you something crazy and then they're out of there.
You seem to be like really hard on the cutscenes. Like if the cutscenes were all half as long, do you feel like you would enjoy the game more?
Well, it's not just that.
Yeah, because I think Bayonetta, the game's boring. To me, the game's the worst part of it. Like we've talked about this a million times. I think the worst Splinter. I enjoy the gameplay in the worst Splinter Cell, like Double Conviction or whatever it is.
Double Conviction.
What was it called?
Splinter Cell. Double Conviction.
You combine two different Splinter Cell games. Yes.
Conviction and double agent.
Double Conviction.
What?
That's like a shitty
Ashley
Judd movie.
That's a game that has confidence in itself. It is 100% knows what it's about.
I mean,
about.
It's called Splinter Cell Double Conviction. Sam Fisher got convicted twice.
Sam Fisher, you will go to Turbo Prison with a double conviction.
And that would be
now,
the Metal Gear Solid version of Splinter Cell.
That's
what it is.
Now it's up to Sam Fisher to clear his name twice.
Honestly, you know what's weird is you just said Double Conviction. That's not weirder than Revengeance for sure.
No, not at all. Yeah. Yeah, Revengeance is my least favorite Metal Gear because again, it felt like a game I liked, but then Kojima kept bugging me every 30 minutes with a stupid cutscene.
But you know, there's a skip button, right?
Huh?
Yeah, there's a skip button.
Hey,
yeah.
John, eat that microphone.
Eat that microphone, John. Again, I just find the gameplay.
It's a tonal difference.
Like, the first one, there's like it takes like four buns to like aim down the sights and like shoot. In Snake, and everybody's
like, if you want to like camouflage,
but the camouflage is not an interesting gameplay mechanic. You literally open up a menu and change your clothes to the thing that you're in. Like,
no, the camouflage, I'm right with you.
That is Farmville
really
level. Like, that's a gameplay mechanic. It's like, here, you're in a grass thing. Go match the grass thing, child. You match your grass. Now please keep walking.
I don't know. Sure, it's archaic now. At the time, it was like comforting because I'd be like really intimidated by how many guys are around, and then I would change.
To be fair,
camo.
You still are.
Yeah. At the time, Crysis had come out, and you could freaking change your camouflage on the fly while doing super boosts and having actual tactical decisions like instantly. Like, there's games that like have interesting.
Well,
like,
the fourth one fixed it. It was auto camo or octo camo.
It was called octo camo because octopi have the ability to naturally camouflage themselves, and that was where they got the technology from. Hi, I'm Anthony.
I love that. But see, that's the thing. It's like, I see Anthony. I'm like, I should be Anthony. Like, everything he's saying is like,
no one has ever said that sentence before.
It's like the way I defend like Bayonetta or something. It's like, yeah. You have like, and that's why it bugs me that I don't get into it. But really, I think it comes down to that. I just don't find, it's the same reason I can't get into, it's the same banal reason I don't like Grand Theft Auto. It's like, well, like Grand Theft Auto, all these interesting things to save. I'm like, I don't know. I just think it's literally the most boring open world game you could possibly play. Like,
and you're a big Just Cause fan.
Just Cause is like, hey, want to play Grand Theft Auto but have fun? Like, play Just Cause. Like,
yeah.
Or that's why I loved, what was the stupid one that everybody bought just to get the beta? The superhero open world game, Crackdown.
Oh yeah, Crackdown.
First Crackdown. That game played like a freaking Mario game. That game controlled wonderfully. That was a blast. Yeah. Grand Theft Auto is like, here's all the most boring elements of a video game put together.
Yeah, the thing about Metal Gear Solid that if it works for you is the coolest thing, and if it doesn't, you feel the way about it that you do, is that it is at the same exact time, not alternating, but at the same exact time, the silliest, dumbest, most willfully ignorant, over-the-top, indulgent, every silly thing that you like, just not taking itself seriously, and then at the same time, taking itself more seriously than any video game.
I
want to
play that game so badly.
World.
Like, when you say that, I'm like, that could literally, that should be on the back of the game I wish I could make. Like, that's why it bugs me. I don't like Metal Gear.
Like, in a weird way, not to the same extent, but like, even like a movie like Speed Racer.
No, exactly. Everything about Metal Gear feels like I should love it, but it's just
interesting. Hold on. Well, hold that thought. So we're joined by John Carmen, DJ John Carmen, on the Wheels of Steel.
Scratch,
here.
DJ Scratch.
DJ Scratch coming at you.
This week at Rocket Jump.
Extraordinaire, who is a staunch Metal Gear Solid fanboy.
He called 2 days launch the greatest game
event
in a decade or something like
that.
Absurd.
He dropped that mic as hard as he could, spiked it into the ground. So, John, tell me just real quick about your first experience with Metal Gear.
Wait, how many people were at the 9 p.m. In line?
A lot.
Really?
40, 50?
A lot.
60?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's legitimate.
Well, it's more.
Tell us a little bit about your history.
I don't know, well, like,
you're a little bit younger than us as well. So
yeah.
The age
like,
is a little bit
different.
Well,
it was like, I was like around 9 or 10. Oh, you know, I loved video games. My parents were worried that I would get too hooked on it. But I would just end up making friends with people I didn't like just so I could like play their video game systems. And so finally they like.
That's the behavior of a crack addict.
Yeah, I eventually my parents just like gave in. They're like, "All right, dude, like we'll get
you
a video game."
What did you get?
Well, it was like the choice between N64 and PlayStation, and everyone of my friends had N64, so I kind of just felt like, I'll just try PlayStation because this is for me. Yeah, and PlayStation is more specialized in single player experiences rather than
straight up some Robert Frost shit. Two roads diverge. You know what I mean?
I take the one with more single player games.
Yeah,
I remember that poem.
No, I just wanted something that I could just like isolate myself with. You know, I didn't want like to have.
Yeah,
like,
you didn't want Mario 64.
I didn't want
the two greatest games of all time. Let's start this console wall. Let's do it.
Nintendo has a good. They have great games, but it's like it's a limited selection of like perfect games. Whereas like
there are five perfect N64 games.
Yeah.
There are like 100 pretty damn good PS1 games.
Yeah, and so Metal Gear was just like the first. I was a little movie.
About,
sorry, what?
Sorry, I'm totally interrupting. Go, John. Talk about Metal Gear.
I was also a little movie geek, so like to play Metal Gear, which was like the first time like the line between a movie and a game was kind of blurred, was just mind blowing. And so I would actually take the time to watch all the cinematics, and I did that in 2. I did that in 3.
Did you ever skip the dialogue, or did you read their subtitles and then wait for them very patiently to say aloud what you just read?
No, I would be patient with it.
Damn.
But then my
that's what you did back in the day, because you're like, I want to play the game and get all the content that my parents paid for.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember like the save points would be really far apart. So if you wanted to like absorb all of the story and the dialogue and the gameplay, you know, it was just hours between save points.
That game was the ultimate troll because
you can
save
anytime you want.
No, but in terms of you can't do it, but you can't do it in the middle of a cutscene.
Yeah,
right?
In the middle of a cutscene.
Oh, in the middle of a cutscene. Oh, yeah.
So it's the ultimate, like, mom, just let's finish this cutscene. Yeah, she doesn't know.
Can you pause it? Not now. It's PS1 era. They haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah. So when it came to like the part with Solidus on the on top of the whatever that was, the New York
trade exchange.
Yeah, and the end of two, like it just cutscene after cutscene after cutscene, then a huge boss battle, then more cutscenes before a save point. And then, like, it was super late at night, and my dad just came and was like, dude, you have to go to bed. And I was like, no, wait, you have to just wait till this cutscene's out. And he's like, all right, fine. And he'd come back like 30 minutes later, and it'd still be going on. I'm like, I swear, I haven't been able to save. And he just would just turn it off. It just kind of, like, crushed me for a while. I had to do it all again because those boss battles are really hard, too. But
I mean,
yeah.
We're talking a lot about all the things that kind of suck about Metal Gear, but like I think what you're getting at with the thing that was like movies and games sort of coexisting for the first time Metal Gear Solid was like, I remember the first time because Ash and I played it side by side, played through the whole thing. It was like a bonding experience for us, which is why part of the reason why it means so much to me. And playing that game, not realizing exactly what genre it existed in and what would be interactive, what would not, playing that game was like having the universe just open to me. Like, everything was possible when I played that game. Like, it's a game that hides a gun, which is like every other game is like, we'll give you a gun in the first 2 seconds. Guns are important. It hides a gun and you can just miss it in the first 5 minutes of the
game.
Under
a trucker,
like,
inside of
it's so weirdly confident in every aspect of its expression of itself that it just feels like you're always seeing something new. Every time you turn a corner, and there's a bunch of corpses and like an invisible vampire thing. What is going on here? And then you turn a corner and you have to fire a remote missile down a hallway. Like it gets bored of itself so quickly that it's throwing new things all the time.
ADD gameplay experience almost.
Yeah, which as a kid, when you haven't been beaten down by AAA games into like expecting they're all going to be like this, it's
and
like this
the
games could be anything
with the exact same control scheme.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so, despite how flawed and weird it is, like, it felt like almost in a weird way of friendship. Like, the developer's, Kojima's personality shined so brightly through the gameplay and the cinematics, every aspect, every weird, like, sort of camera zoom on like some girl's boobs that was just unnecessary or whatever.
It just felt like a guy I didn't want to be friends with. I think that's what it is.
No, I mean, I'm sure if I knew him in
like
real
really
life.
Specific, like, I agree. But
I'm just saying, but how often, I mean, at least now you have like indie games where like there's.
No, no, I think that is why.
In the day, that was like.
But wait, that's true. And that's one of the things that's most fascinating why I keep will always play them because.
So he's just like the weird guy.
I was literally saying, and maybe this is unfair to him, but like, I feel like part of it is also. Again, I don't know, maybe this like inside out analogy is totally wrong, but I feel like there's always something that does that creates that island in your brain for you, like the friendship island in Inside Out or like the family island, and like that's why everybody who watched Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which like I think is kind of the only okay movie, it created the martial arts island, so we're like, that's the greatest martial arts movie ever, and then you're like, wait, no, I saw Iron Monkey, I've seen Once Upon a Time in China 1, 2, and 3, like there's way better movies, and I think maybe like Metal Gear was that to so many people, like it merged movies and games, and like it's Akira for some people, where it's like I watched a lot of anime before I saw Akira, and I saw Akira like I freaking hated it. I was like, this is the most boring, horrible anime I've ever seen in my life. How is this everybody's
worst gateway anime?
Same thing with Ghost in the Shell. I tried watching
that.
I was like,
Ghost in the Shell.
And those are, but those for certain people, that's Metal Gear. That's like, that is the best, like, because that is the thing that opened up the world to them. And like, Metal Gear Solid, like, I was a PC gamer also,
so
like,
you're saying almost in
like
Half Life,
like, Half Life came out around the same time, and like, again, and Rogue Spear, like, Rogue Spear was to me was like stealth. And spy and like wrote and Rainbow Six and so in a while it felt dumb.
So in
like,
a weird way, it by being
and it felt
early,
cinematic to me too. It felt
by being early, it opened up.
Well, I wonder. I'm just because I think there's a lot of value to Metal Gear Solid. So I'm not just missing it by saying.
But I
wonder if that's what it is.
But what was interesting that what was John's talking about. That I think that absolutely could be a big part of it. Which that makes me wonder.
I wonder how many new Metal Gear Solid fans there are.
How many seasoned video game fans got into Metal Gear
3? I'm sure there are, of course.
Yeah, yeah. It's got into Metal Gear Solid.
But again, is it like Metal Gear Solid 3 came in when they were 12, and it's like the first game like that for them,
or is it a new game they had played a bunch of stuff and that was got them into the series? Yeah, that's a good question, right? How many people went back to the first one after playing number three being.
So I think one of the things that I say again, maybe is unfair is like I maybe feel like it's also there are so few auteurs. Again, it's like you know about game, who knows, like maybe it's at this point it's just like there's just as many people involved in it. Obviously there's hundreds of people who are making it, but it's like it's almost as if Michael Bay was the only person making movies, and then it's like he's the greatest, like I love his stuff. It's like but like if there was like at least six other people that were doing action adventure games that had like a personality, maybe it'd be pretty clear that's like like everything about this is borderline unbearable, but it's like just, unique.
But he's there's legitimately good in a lot of ways too.
There is again, and there are like
his characterization is incredible. Like we were talking about the sniper wolf death scene, like it makes me tear up every single time. Mm-hmm. And again, that scene is literally 15, 20 years old. Like it's ridiculous. It evokes
no other game for me, like, or the series all the way through, evokes this feeling of nostalgia. Like, he's still, like, when you open up menus or anything, he's still using the same sound effects that he had back in 1998. Like,
it becomes something greater than what it is now, though. You know?
But see, that's fascinating. I think it's the specific, and maybe that it's interesting to hear that, because, like, it's the same guy making that sort of thing. But to me, that's, like, maybe that's the cocaine that is. To me, that's, like, doesn't even compare to when I open up a new Mario game. Like, it's just, like, my entire life.
Smell it.
It's, like, 20 years of Nintendo gloriousness. And stuff. Like, it's, like, so much nostalgia. Like, I feel like other games evoke that nostalgia.
That's an interesting sort of dystopian view of what video games will become. It's just nostalgia vehicles for all of our childhoods. Mm. Maybe.
Part of it. But
I mean,
like,
that's where a lot of the good in Metal Gear Solid 4 in particular comes out. But, like, what's really interesting about the games to me are, if you've grown up with them, you get to sort of plot your own character growth against the way that Snake grows or does not grow. Like, I mean, to the point where now I used to consider myself a person that was very much in line with, like, yeah, I want to be like Solid Snake. Like, he's this guy who's a real hard ass and a bad, but he also desperately cares about, like, people. He really likes girls. He really likes girls. But he's got, like, everybody makes fun of him. In the first game, he has this, like, Otacon asks him, like, do you think love can bloom on a battlefield? He's like, I think love can bloom anytime. And he, like, with this gritty voice, like, it's like, I really think romance is important. And I was like, that's me or something. But then the older you get, like, the last Metal Gear game, Ground Zeroes, ends with, like, a woman having a bomb forced in her orifices, and then they explode, and it's like, oh, I'm just a different guy than Hideo Kojima now. I've come far from where I am now.
By the time, like, 4 had come out, I was, like, starting to... I wasn't skipping cutscenes, but I was not enjoying them.
You were rolling your eyes a little more.
But that is interesting. I think that that's the same... If we want to go back to soap operas, it's the same thing. Like, you guys have... It's interesting to... You have something, because, like, even something like Nintendo is still, like, a franchise. There's, like, now that you bring up, I can't think of a character that has developed over the course of 20 years in video games. At all. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anybody. I'm trying to think of a single, like, story-driven character that's been around for that long.
There's a Mega 64 sketch where somebody's trying to get the two of the guys to go to a wedding when Metal Gear Solid 4 comes out. And it's just a throwaway line, but they go, I'm not going to your fucking wedding. Like, I've known Solid Snake way longer than your mom knows Jeff. And it's like, holy shit, that's true. Like, there was a moment at the end of Metal Gear Solid 4 where you're basically, you as Snake are crawling to the end of this corridor filled with microwaves. Well, on the bottom of the screen, and on the top of the screen, it's every character you've grown to love over 15 years of playing video games slowly getting shot down and almost dying and being put in danger. And I was playing that with my sister, and she and I were screaming at the top of our lungs. She was off of the couch screaming at me, press it, we have to keep going, he can't die here. And
it's like nothing ever made me feel that way. It's like one of the most intense.
And I remember looking at that sequence after you guys talked about it.
Yeah. And it's like, here's, like, the, I think the major...
I wish it did.
I think it's like the major difference between something like Metal Gear and Mario is that Mario, it's been the same experience, just improved upon over and over. Like, he runs, he jumps, he fights Bowser, he saves the princess.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Mario is unpretentious. Yeah. It gives you what it wants to give you and no more. Yeah. And it's just very, very...
And what it wants to give you, by the way, is the greatest feeling a human being can experience.
It's perfect, but it's digital form. It's perfect and it's focused, and there's almost never, like, name a bad Mario game. There's, like, two.
Yeah.
But Metal Gear Solid
but the thing that I think is, when you talk about that gun, sitting under the table, I actually think that's exactly what... why Miyamoto is the greatest game designer is that he does every level of Mario is full of hundreds of guns hidden underneath tables that shouldn't be there. Little things like you hit a flower and, like, little sparkles fly. Why? Because Nintendo can literally make it, but it's so good and perfect at what it does, you don't even notice that every single thing they're doing is complete magic. Like, it's just like, what? Oh, you can ice skate. When you ice skate, the animation's different. It's like, just as there's more stuff happening in those games, it's just not as, like, yo, check it out. Yeah, I hit girls' boobs on the inside of a locker because you can figure it out. Nintendo would just be like,
Can we talk about that for a second, by the way? Uh-huh. Like, what a weird feeling that was for me when Metal Gear 2 came out and just being like, you lock yourself in a locker and then there's a girl's, like, a bikini pic inside. And then if you press R2, which usually is just kind of like to look closer against the grate, you can just kiss the poster. And it's
that's
like
a thing you can do.
And you just kiss the poster. I'm just like, what? Like, why? Like, it's so many weird pervy things hidden. It's just bizarre. Whereas, like, Mario is streamlined, so, like, people of all ages can just enjoy and
Mario's
pick up and play.
Yeah.
Metal Gear is like
Mario doesn't make out with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Metal Gear,
those are all good things
you're
saying so far.
No, it's borderline. It's almost borderline masochistic, weird, just out there experience, but
has all this AAA money behind it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, that's everything that's so fascinating. I just wish it was more. Yeah. It's like when Mike talked about, it's like Mike arguing against us with Michael Bay, and I get why he feels this way with Michael Bay. It's like, you're right. That's what fascinates me. I just wish it was more interesting. Like it's like, you're right. It's really weird. Like, it's interesting on an academic level to me that this guy can do all this stuff and there's all these fascinating things. I just wish the weird thing that happened was more interesting than you could kiss a girl. All that makes me be like, oh yeah, Hideo Kojima is like one of those really weird people I've met in my 30 years of living many times. He just happens to also make huge video games. You know, it's like, I wish something made me go like, whoa, he has a really fast, like, I just, like, he's a great mind, like, or like that's like, really interesting, or I'm going
to
remember that.
Like, to the same extent that
Kamari Damacy. And I know it does for other people. I wish it did that for me.
Like, I'll say, like, I had that feeling around the guy made Kamari Damacy. It's like,
yeah,
this
like,
guy
yes.
a vision.
Because that's just as bizarre, but it's fast. And the same thing with Ico and Shadows of Colossus. Yeah, like, I'm like, that is a fascinating. It's and not only that, it feels like worthwhile. Yeah. You know, it feels like something like, and again, not that it has to be pretentious, because I think, again, I've argued so many times that, like, if you want Citizen Kane, like, Mario to me is the peak of cinematic of gaming art. It doesn't matter if it's cinematic or not. I feel like everybody wants games to be more like movies, which is maybe one of the other things I don't like. That's the other thing with Metal Gear Solid. Like, I've always been more into Half-Life style of that,
totally.
or Rainbow Six. To me, Rainbow Six is a better, the first Rainbow Six where you're strategizing is a better spy story than any of the Metal Gear Solid games, because I made that whole story. It's emergent. Like that's what I want games to be.
It's just, it's like, for me, what attracts me to it is like the ambition. Even if he doesn't pull it off, and it's just bad at times, it's the ambition that, no, I'm going to make this Citizen Kane level epic for a video game. And what's so cool about the new one is now it's seamless. Like, it doesn't cut the game to watch a cutscene. It become like the camera moves from the character which you're playing. It becomes this like Alfonso Cuarón long take, and then goes back, you know, into controlling the character.
Because
seamlessly.
That's just like and I saw that when I was watching the scene that you're showing. But it's like, I mean, that's like a technical thing. It's still just gameplay into a cutscene. You know, like on like an actual.
But even like little
no
things
difference.
Like how you can like zoom in the camera and it's
and
still
like and like look at girls' boobs
or a guy's butt. To be fair, in the beginning.
No,
of
like, oh my god! There's
also people have been stuff like that. Like eco games do that. Like there's been many games that like you slightly control the cutscene.
Yeah, no, I mean it's fundamentally the kind of stories that Metal Gear Solid tells are not the kind of stories that are best suited to games. I'm completely with you. Like, I prefer Half-Life style. I prefer emergent storytelling, like XCOM, or just stuff that happens emergently through gameplay. I used to be the Metal Gear Solid was the game that made me for 10 years prefer the other kind of cutscene laden thing. But it just at the end of the day is like I can play Mario and feel really, really good about myself.
Yeah.
I play Metal Gear and I'm like learning things about myself. I'm like seeing myself reflected in another human being and seeing the ways that we differ and are the same.
That's so weird. That's like the exact opposite experience. Like I play Metal Gear Solid, like I can like learn stuff about Hideo Kojima, and I play Mario.
Maybe you
and
need
I'm
to
like,
open your
I'm
heart
like, this is
to Hideo.
No, it's like playing. No, because like I feel like you learn about yourself. Here's what it is. Play. Now I was going to. Now this is super pretentious and academic. But like play is like a vital part of human. Like species and animals. Animals play. Like, you know, young dogs, they play. Like, it's a safe space to literally learn. I learn, and like, that's not true because some of the stuff you can do in the gameplay, Metal Gear Solid, but to me, like, a playground with in something like Mario is, as weird as it sounds, like, important to the human, like, species.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, that's why I believe about play, and that's why sports are important, that's why stuff like that. And so games that make me feel like I'm exploring, like, when I play a Nintendo game, like, I feel like I'm exploring a forest that I could do so many things in, and not it's not dangerous, so that's why it's play, that's why it's not an adventure, it's not me going out and, like, fighting wolves or something like that. And, like, Metal Gear Solid games always feel like I'm pressing buttons.
Right.
Like I'm pressing buttons, I'm doing these things, and I'm being shown a cinematic. A Nintendo game, it's like I've been thrown into this amazing space to play, and within that play, I learn about, you know, myself. Even if it's just about my, you know, what are my instincts when I, like, I always climb the highest thing, right? Like, like things like this, like, that's valuable to me. That's why I love, like, great, that's why I love that stuff. It's the Kamari Damacy. It's like, I appreciate it, and I love the ambition of Metal Gear Solid. I wish it's the same reason why like Uncharted will never be my favorite game series, even though I really like it. It's like, cool, it's a pretty good game and a pretty good movie. Great, you know, as opposed to, I don't know.
All right. Well, look, we have to wrap it up. And by the way, play is always safe, unless, of course, your dad's telling you that you got to get down to the basement to learn something that you've been doing wrong.
That's not play anymore.
Whoa, that's not play anymore.
That's dark.
That's external.
I know.
Oh, you missed
it's
this part
of
the coming
report. It's still dark, but not as dark as you think it is.
Anyway, I think we are well over time,
yeah, so
I'd like to thank everybody here. Thank you, Benji. Thank you, John Carmen, Matt Arnold.
Look, do you think because Metal Gear Solid, like, Snake is the one character we've gotten?
He's not the one character.
This should be your next book, though. It's like, is Snake the perfect is it the hero the video game industry needed for 25 years? Yeah. Like when it's done and he's done with five, and then who knows what the industry does after that? Is like Solid Snake like the perfect representation of just the male
super teenagey kind of pervy?
That's kind of the first chapter of the book.
Yeah,
yeah, kind
of. I should read it.
I can vouch for the book. If you even have a slight interest in Metal Gear, you owe it to yourself to read this book. It's fantastic.
And you can find it on Amazon.com or BossFightBooks.com.
Mm-hmm. BossFightBooks.com.
All right. Check it out. Awesome. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you for your academic insight and boob jokes. Thank you, John Carmen, for your love of the game, and Matt, for your general indifference to it. Until next time, Benji Dog, Mixed Match Producer, see you guys all later.